anything to have you on my team. All. Baby girl, I'd trade it all. That's Fabulous and Jagged Edge. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jays Talk Plus. The Blue Jays have not traded it all, but they have traded most of what they have to sell at the trade deadline. They have made now 5 trades, bringing back 11 prospects, sending out 4 expiring contracts, as well as Nate Pearson, Trevor Richards, and Kevin Kiermaier. The expiring deals still hanging around here. We also expect the Blue Jays will listen, at least on guys like Chad Green and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, who have a little bit of term. But the heavy lifting is done. The heavy lifting was done in between 2 games of a doubleheader yesterday, by the way. The Jays lost 11-5 and then won a big one. It was a touch-and-go day. Yariel Rodriguez needed 43 pitches in the first inning. Scary moment where he hit James McCann in the face, and James McCann now looks like Danny DeVito at the end of the episode where he busts his face and tries to plug it with hot sauce and things like that. James McCann stays in the game after that. Really incredible. That kind of set the tone for that first one. Yariel not getting out of the first inning. The Jays having to cover the final 7 2/3 of that, or 7 1/3 of that one, with the bullpen. Then game 2, Bowden Francis comes through and gives them the longest outing of his career at the major league level, 5 2/3, and the offense comes around. So the Jays split the doubleheader. We're mostly going to talk trade today, but I did want to start the show off with those notes on the doubleheader, because there was a lot going on in there. Justin Turner got pulled from a game because he got traded. Yusei Kikuchi got traded between games. Addison Barger hit his first career home run. Alejandro Kirk had a 3-hit day. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. had 2 singles, 3 doubles, 2 home runs, a walk, 5 RBI, and his weighted runs created plus on the season is now up to 155, which is a stone's throw from where it was in 2021, because the offensive environment right now is so much lower around baseball. Incredible heater for Vlad. Incredibly busy day. We expect an incredibly busy one today as well. We are with you from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Today, so very extended hours. We've got just about everyone coming on with us throughout the show today, starting with Shai Davidi of Sportsnet in a moment here. But again, if you missed it, the Jays have made 5 trades to this point. Yesterday, the 2 being that they traded Justin Turner to the Mariners, along with cash for RJ Schreck, who's an unranked prospect. This one mostly about getting out of some of the remaining money owed to Justin Turner the rest of the season. The other is Yusei Kikuchi to the Astros for Jake Bloss, Joey Loperfido, and Will Wagner, a trade return that had everyone around the industry kind of being like, what? You got all that for 2 months of a rental starting pitcher with a 4.75 ERA? We obviously love Yusei Kikuchi here in Toronto on the show, but that is quite the return. The Jays overall, 11 prospects back. And if you look around baseball, my note list on how many trades have happened and what the returns are is enormous. Baseball America has been tracking every prospect who's been traded. There have been 46 prospects traded so far over the last couple of days. Jake Bloss ranks number 2 among them. He is a fringe top 100 guy at Baseball America. He is just inside the top 100 over at Fangraphs. Let's check on the ground in Baltimore. Shai Davidi has been doing a ton of great work up at sportsnet.ca, as well as chipping in on Blue Jay Central. He joins us now. Shai, how we doing, man?
All right, how we doing, Blake?
I'm good. Busy day yesterday. Couple of baseball games, couple of trades. Obviously it's been a busy weekend as well. The Jays have made 5 trades now. Fair to say the heaviest of the lifting is done for this Blue Jays team?
Yeah, that's the sense that I've gotten. And for a while now, we've been talking about how their focus is going to be on their rental players and moving their rental players. And that's really what's happened so far. Aside from Nate Pearson, everyone who's moved has been a rental players. 4 of the 6, they've got 2 left in Kevin Kiermaier and Trevor Richards. My sense is that would be the focus of their work today. And it's interesting, you know, you just look at the returns around the game and the way that it's such a seller's market, you'd have to at least think to yourself, okay, do you want to maybe examine and be a little bit opportunistic with some of your players with 1+ year of service time left? But the posture that the Blue Jays are taking with other clubs to this point does not indicate a shift there. It's possible. I mean, they have a lot of time and not necessarily a ton of work left to do here. I would think that both Richards and Kiermaier might be right towards the deadline types of deals as other things happen and teams end up falling back to them. So they have maybe a bit of time to explore some other opportunities and maybe something else comes around. But for the time being, as things currently stand, that seems to be the approach for the Blue Jays.
So what, obviously the Blue Jays have not done their end of deadline media availability and things like that, but I know that you're talking to lots of people. You've been down there in Baltimore. What is the sense or buzz in terms of excitement level of the work that they've done so far? Not to, you know, prospects can become a lot of different things, but 11 guys back in for four expirings and Nate Pearson, some of whom are going to slot into the top 10 to 15 in this Blue Jays organization farm rankings.
Yeah, well, I think the way to look at it and the way that I've been thinking about this is that over the past few years, the Blue Jays, the foundation in terms of their farm system has really just been eroding, right? There've been all these cracks. They've had to use a lot of prospect capital and win now. Trades, some draft picks haven't worked out, and they haven't really had a stable foundation as a result. And so when you have some injuries and some underperformance in a season like this, there's not enough underpinning it to help overcome some of the challenges. And so what they've really done in starting with the draft, but especially now really accelerating it because guys are closer to the big league level, it's just starting to patch up some of that foundation. Now there's still a lot of work to do at the big league level to overcome that, but they've got four guys who are relatively either immediate, like Loperfido's joining the team in Baltimore. I don't think it'll be long before Bloss is here. Will Wagner is on the horizon. Jonathan Classe is knocking on the door as well. So that's four pieces that are suddenly factoring into your system, and you were out of those type of guys because everybody's sort of up who was going to be up. So I think that's where the Blue Jays feel like they've done some good work now. So they're a little bit deeper. Does this change the trajectory of the franchise? Not yet, but right now the franchise is on a more stable footing than it was. They're still not a critical mass in terms of talent and young talent in the system. They've got work to do there as well. But this is stabilizing where they were because they were really collapsing from the inside in.
And to give some context on that, and different sites are going to rank it differently, different front offices will, but Fangraphs, for example, prior to the trade deadline has had the Jays ranked as the number 25 farm system. They've been updating that live. They're up to 21 now. So they're not out of the woods yet, but they have, you know, stabilized a little bit. Like you said, there's more foundation there to either, hey, flyers on guys who maybe develop later, guys who can be inexpensive depth at the major league level next year, or that kind of major league to AAA level. And then, yeah, it's always worth recognizing too, when you're in a competitive window, it makes you a little more comfortable to turn around and trade guys for something a little later if that comes up. The other thing that Jays, I had assumed, were trying to accomplish here, Shai, and I know fans don't care as much about this one, but ducking below the competitive balance tax threshold, because that changes, you know, the draft compensation you're paying. If you sign a qualified free agent, you can avoid things like international slot pool bonus getting hit if you sign certain guys, and then your money will go farther next year because you're not paying the repeater tax. The public numbers, we don't know how much of Justin Turner's deal they ate and things like that, but do you get the sense that they are close enough that by the end of today, you kind of figure they'll be below that tax line?
Maybe, and I haven't dug in, I haven't had a chance to dig in yet on sort of the financial implications of yesterday yet. They were going to be in the area there. My sense is that this was a nice to have, not necessarily a goal, right? Because if you're not past the second threshold and you aren't in a situation where you're losing, you're moving back in the draft as a result of your CBT spending, then the penalty is mostly financial and it's not as restrictive or as onerous, right? And I do understand there's the repeater tax, as you mentioned, it's onerous. The Jays would be a third time through if they're past it again. But in terms of the prime motivator, I think the key thing for the Blue Jays here has been just trying to get the best possible talent. Sometimes that means, like in the case of Justin Turner, where you're including some money just to get something back there that have that bit of a lottery ticket. So that's a nice to have. They'd obviously be happy to duck under it and have that reset. I'm not sure it's the primary goal. And, you know, like with Kevin Kiermaier, the likelihood, if they do move him today, is that they're going to be having to include some money in that deal as well. So I don't know that you're getting a ton of financial savings. Trevor Richards isn't going to be a huge number. It's going to be tough for them, I think, or it's going to be close at least to get under that line. But if they do end up there, that turns out to be a nice bonus from this deadline.
Yeah, and it's one of those ones where I was a little, when we saw the return, I kind of thought, well, maybe they don't care about the CBT quite as much. Maybe they're paying down some of Yusei Kikuchi because that's why the return's so good. And then it turns out they're not. And that, you know, by the public estimates, pushes Houston into the second tax level. So even more curious there. Shai, what did you make of, look, obviously we can sit here, we can analyze. You know, we don't know these prospects necessarily as much as some of the prospect people do, but universally, it seemed like yesterday everyone around baseball thought the Jays got a really good deal on the Yusei Kikuchi return here. I know you mentioned a couple of the guys there, but what is your reaction when you see that, when you see newsbreakers and analysts and prospect people being like, wow, that's a really good haul?
Well, it's kind of funny. This is about, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago. Maybe you were part of this discussion with us in the press box, but we were kicking around some possible destinations for Kikuchi back then. And I said, you know, I wonder if the Jays could build something with the Astros around Blas or Spencer Arrighetti. And, you know, maybe they give them another one of their relievers back to make it happen. And as it's coming in yesterday, Ben and I got a note, and it was, you know, it would be building towards, it's not just Blas for Kikuchi. And then Ben and I were kind of looking at each other and we're like, are the Jays including another player in this to get more guys back? Because Blas alone would have been a pretty good return. This is a guy who's been through four levels this year. He's touched the majors. He's got 3 starts. He's got pretty good stuff. He's got a chance to be a back end starter. You potentially have 6 more seasons of him if he's able to take. Like that's a tough piece to get because controllable pitching is so valuable. And then starts coming in more and Loperfido's in the deal, Wagner's in the deal. You're like, okay, this is a sign of how hot this market is. And so the thing that's inherent to all these trades is that these guys might not become what you think they're going to, right? And clubs are smart. Like Dana Brown, the Astros GM, didn't just suddenly hit his head and become dumb, right? Mm-hmm. The clubs are always thinking about which of their prospects might be valued more in the industry versus how they see them. And when there's a gap there, that's when they try to strike to leverage the return for them. If a team has someone who's going to be a can't miss, they generally aren't giving that guy up. So there's going to be risk with each one of the pieces back. The fact that you've got a potential starter in Jake Blas, Joey Loperfido is definitely a big leaguer, and he can do a bunch of different things and play a few spots. Will Wagner's interesting as a guy who controls the strike zone, has some pop, doesn't have a defensive position, but can hit. You know, you want to take a chance on guys like that. So the more bodies that you get, the better a probability there is. So I thought this was a shocking return because of the depth of possibility in it. And that's not necessarily something you'd expect for 2 months of a starter.
Okay. So you mentioned, and just to clarify, you did say that Joey Loperfido is going to join the team in Baltimore, right?
That's my understanding. Yeah.
Okay. There was a report out there that De Los Santos from AAA was maybe going to join. I mean, it's possible they do both, and there's some subsequent churn there. Luis De Los Santos being that one. Do you know yet what the initial plan is for Blas if he's headed to AAA or has a potential? Like Yariel got optioned yesterday. There's a bit of a hole in the rotation still to work through here.
Yeah, I think there's just a lot of moving parts right now. My understanding is that Blas and Wagner, at least initially, will head to Buffalo. Blue Jays are going to need a starter for tomorrow. And this is a rule that I just discovered a couple of days ago. But if somebody is on option, if there's a trade, then that removes the need to spend 10 days.
The Mitch White corollary.
Yeah, exactly. 15 days for a pitcher. So Blas could potentially be an option tomorrow, but I don't know that yet. I'm not sure the Blue Jays know exactly what they're doing with everything yet, because there has been a very significant amount of roster churn, especially with the doubleheader, just getting bodies here. So it's been a pretty pretty chaotic 24 hours.
Yeah, it certainly has been. You know, probably as exciting as Blas would be, like, it's probably going to be Paolo Espino or a bullpen day or something like that with whoever's left over after Tuesday. It's also fourth game in 48 hours and day game after night game coming off the doublehead. There's a lot going on. Everyone who has an arm is going to have to pitch in that one. So you had mentioned that right now the Jays are, you know, Richards and Kiermaier very available as expirings. Given what the market prices out there are, maybe you have to listen on some of those guys. Chad Green and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, do you think those guys would kind of be in a medium tier of, yeah, we're not calling you about them, but if you call, like, we're willing to listen. Is that a fair characterization, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, you're going to listen on everybody, but it's also the last day of the deadline. Like, if there hasn't been a lot of legwork done on other pieces in advance, it's pretty hard to just suddenly call up a team, say, hey, do you want to do this? And then 3 minutes later, it's done, right? There's usually a lot of groundwork that's been laid in advance to make a deal like that happen. So it's always possible, but that's not the sense that I have. That could all, again, it could always change. Like, this is the deadline and things are going to go wild at the end. But the trajectory that the Blue Jays seem to be on is that it's just going to be those last two deals. If they find transactions that they want to do there. I think in this market, like, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is definitely someone who's helping a team. Chad Green is definitely someone who's helping a team. But the Blue Jays have maintained all along that they're looking more towards a reset for 25 and an opportunity to compete again that year. And so if that really is your plan and you're determined to go that route, then you're going to need Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. You're going to need a Chad Green. You're going to need a Chris Bassett, and Green especially, right? The Blue Jays have to rebuild their bullpen, right?
The whole thing.
If you look at it right now and you're thinking, okay, if you're going to try to compete in 25, who's going to be key in that bullpen? You're like, okay, you've got Chad Green and Hennessy Cabrera, and then you've got to figure out what Eric Swanson is. And then who do you really trust at this point? And so this is definitely a time of opportunity for a lot of dudes in the pen right now. But I think that, to go back to your original question, if you're thinking about the other opportunities in the market, well, you've got to balance that against what you're doing in 25 right now as well.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, my counter to that would probably be, well, Chad Green and IKF at $18 million combined, if you're a good front office, you should be able to replicate that for $18 million or maybe a little bit less. But also, you know, bird in hand and things like that, guys you know and trust a little better. So be interesting to play that one out. Last one for you here on the deadline. We always hear these things. You know, you want to hear good things said about the organization on the way. You want Justin Turner to have really liked how he was treated and things like that. You want Yusei Kikuchi to be happy in Canada. Danny Jansen obviously meant a lot here. And then a lot of times fans will quickly turn to, well, you could sign them in the offseason. There's no rule against that. Do you think that's, like, given that the Jays want to compete again in 2025, like, a Kikuchi or Jansen return, is that actually a realistic thing, or is that just something everyone says to play nice when a deal happens here?
You know, on Kikuchi especially, I've had some conversations, and it's like, yeah, that could probably happen if we want to make it happen. And Kikuchi seems to have really found himself here, and there's a significant value to that. Now, let's say he goes to Houston and things maybe don't necessarily go great for him. Does he feel like, I want to go back to that comfort zone I had in Toronto, where I had a really good relationship with Pete Walker and the rest of the pitching staff there, and they were an important part of my success? That's certainly in play. But again, you also have to think, well, what are you doing in 25? What's that going to cost you? What does that rotation look like? And those are all real questions. Like, right now, if you're projecting out the Blue Jays, you've got Gausman, Bassett, Berríos, and then you've got to figure out what Yariel Rodriguez is. You got to figure out what Bowden Francis is. You got to figure out what Jake Blas is. You do need some certainty, but how much is that going to cost you for Kikuchi? And what is that preventing you from doing it elsewhere, because as we said, you got to rebuild that bullpen. You got to augment that lineup. I mean, we're not talking enough about that right now. And, you know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is having a stretch that is just unbelievable right now. Like that's one of the best single day performances in franchise history yesterday. And it's a footnote, but he's doing that with like nobody around him nobody established behind him. And he needs to have some dudes around him, and it can't just be Bo Bichette when he gets healthy. So there are a lot of things that have to happen in around this team to make sure that they get around that. And so you'd have to frame a potential Kikuchi return, a potential Jansen return against what are the collective needs of this team next year, because they are very, very substantial.
Yeah, and I think that's helpful context, and I think a fair way to frame this deadline is, you know, you shouldn't have been here in the first place. The plan wasn't to be sellers. Having said that, pretty good deadline so far. Having said that, a lot of work to do for 2025 to compete against still. So, you know, kind of juggling three different thoughts there. Shai, do you have time for a fun one, or I got to let you go?
Yeah, no, I got a couple minutes.
Okay, I have a whole bunch of Jay's deadline trivia ready to go for guests throughout the day. I went back as far as 1992. Before that, I was a baby. I don't remember anything. So pick an era, and I'll get you one from somewhere in there. So you can go Pat Gillick era, Gord Ash era, J.P. Ricciardi era, Anthopoulos, this front office, whatever you want to do.
Okay. Well, J.P. Ricciardi, there wouldn't be much because there wasn't a lot done at that deadline. And obviously, Pat Gillick, there are a few classic ones. Let's do the Alex Anthopoulos era.
All right. Okay. So his first trade deadline in 2010, he made a trade that would eventually, if you follow the trade tree, bring them Devin Travis. What was that trade?
Eventually brought in Devin Travis. So at the trade deadline, Travis was Anthony Gose. Gose came from Halliday.
Missing one step.
Indirectly Halliday. It was the first baseman, who I'm blanking on his name right now. And then at that.
You got it if you get the first baseman's name. This is the trade. That guy for Anthony Gose.
I cannot. Why am I blanking on his name?
All right.
Right now.
Do you want it?
It's my brain as much because I've slept 3 hours in the past 2 days.
It's all right. You got most of the chance. It's Brett Wallace.
Brett Wallace, who was originally drafted by Oakland and ended up in Houston at a certain point. Or, you know, Phillies, Oakland.
Yeah. Originally a Jays draft pick. Then went back and then was a Cardinals draft pick, then bounced all around. He ended up playing in Houston after because the Jays traded him for Anthony Gose, obviously. But yeah, he came back for Michael Taylor. It's a long trade tree for that one, but it eventually leads
to he was in a Matt Holliday trade too, right? At some point.
Yes, he was with Clayton Mortensen and Shane Peterson for Matt Holliday. Pretty good Matt Holliday trade there if you're the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, you want one more?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. There was a player in 2011 who they traded for and then immediately traded away as part of a bigger package. He has been traded almost more times than anyone in baseball history and has played for almost the most teams in baseball history. Do you remember who it was?
Edwin Jackson.
There you go. They didn't want to frame it as a three-teamer. They did it as two separate trades, but yeah, it's a... turnaround, trade him again. And then
the Cardinals and the White Sox, right? Zepchinski ends up going to the Cardinals as well.
Yeah, the Colby Rasmus trade.
In that deal. Right.
Yeah, good one. See, you got it. And by the way, as I was prepping for this, I do know that you did this not that long ago as like a Sportsnet piece. So I figured you would do pretty well. So good on you, Shai. And thanks for taking the time out this morning, man.
Yeah, no problem. And should be fun the rest of the day.
Should be. All right. Shai Davidi of Sportsnet. Make sure you're following him. I mean, you're a Jays fan listening to a Jays radio show. Obviously, you follow Shai Davidi and read everything he's writing. Him and Ben Nicholson-Smith both with pretty good written pieces up from the chaos of yesterday and digesting what the Blue Jays got back in these series of trades. We're going to take a break. We're going to get to know some of these prospects a little better. Talk to our pal Jeff Ponce of Baseball America, who not only is Baseball America's main guy for the Jays system, he also happens to be Baseball America's main guy for the Astros system when they're doing the offseason handbooks. And he has a good chunk of the Cubs and Red Sox farm systems in season. So basically, the Jays have operated the Jeff Ponce trade deadline. Let's take a break. Let's get to know some of these prospects with him as Jays Talk Plus continues. Trade deadline special on the Sportsnet Radio Network at Sportsnet 360.
Dive deep into Toronto sports and the NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. That's The Future Freaks Me Out. I hope the future doesn't freak you out because the Jays have traded 5 players for 11 prospects with an eye toward that future, both long-term and maybe to a little bit of an extent 2025 here, with a couple of those guys coming back, potentially factoring in rest of this season and into next year, including 2 of the pieces they got back for Yusei Kikuchi from the Houston Astros. By the way, the long show today, we're on the air with you from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Trade deadline is at 6 p.m. So lots of baseball around the network. Throughout this show, we'll sprinkle in your texts, your questions, your thoughts, etc. You can text us at 590-590. Standard message and data rates may apply. We'll get to a bunch of those. Got a couple Twitter ones as well. We'll get to lots of that throughout. But in terms of the future, freak me out. Let's talk to Jeff Ponce of Baseball America, see how he's feeling about the future of the Toronto Blue Jays. Jeff, good morning. Thanks for doing this on deadline day. How are we feeling?
Pretty good, man. It's for somebody who ranks the Blue Jays system, you know, year round, and it's been tough sledding over the last year or so, just in terms of the depth in the system. This has been a welcome change, and you know, for me, 3 of the teams that they've traded with, these 11 prospects that they've added, are teams that you know, I either cover in season, like the Red Sox or the Cubs and the Astros, who are teams that I handle year round, just like the Blue Jays for the handbook. So I'm really familiar with sort of all these players that are coming in. I don't have to write new scouting reports, just have to update a couple of things. But really, what a haul. And I think, you know, the biggest blow was last night, trading Kikuchi. And, you know, I've had multiple people within front offices, analysts, you know, front office decision makers, executives, scouts, all sort of praise this Kikuchi trade. When the deal initially was reported, I thought it was bloss, straight up for Kikuchi. I'm sort of thinking like, hey, this is a really good deal for the Blue Jays. This is a guy they're going to have 6 years of control over versus, you know, a 2.5 months with Kikuchi. They're not going anywhere. There's a chance that he walks anyway. They didn't just get back Bloss, who now has 6 years of control, was a guy that was drafted in the 3rd round last year out of Georgetown, you know, was in the major leagues by June of his first year as a professional. I think we have to consider that when you look at some of the numbers at the major league level. This guy didn't even spend half a season, didn't even make it to the all-star break, you know, at the full season level, you know, already was shot up to the major leagues. Obviously the Astros needed the help, but they do a good job of identifying pitching. They've proven that over a long period of time. But I think in terms of how they manage their roster, that's changed a lot under Dana Brown. He's under a lot of fire, as is the front office, ownership, et cetera, over this trade, because they didn't just send Bloss, which I think I probably wouldn't have done for Kikuchi to begin with. They then add in Laperfido, who's a close to the majors player, has some strikeout issues, but is actually a really good athlete, can play first base, second base, can actually play some center field as well. He's got power. He's got speed, on base ability. I think if you get the contact skills up to snuff at the major league level, he's also a player that sort of needs, I'd say, a few months to sort of adjust to each new level if you look at some of his numbers over the last couple of years. And then you add a guy in Will Wagner, where, you know, the Blue Jays love their players that come from major league pedigree. He's, of course, Billy Wagner's son. This is one of the better hit tools in the Astros system, now in the Blue Jays system. I think I looked last night, he almost has twice as many walks as he does strikeouts. There's not a ton of power there, but there's some. I actually likened it in my trade write-up. I don't think it's all that different from what you traded away when you traded away a 39-year-old Justin Turner. Obviously, you know, maybe a little bit more of a later breakout. I think you can look at the Astros major league lineup and say that, yeah, there probably wasn't a lot of opportunity for him to play second base or third base. They have some pretty well-known veterans there, of course. I think this was a massive win, and I think the organization's really happy about it. Outside of the organization, people are kind of shocked that the Astros gave up this much, you know, for a left-hander who, you know, has pretty good stuff, has had some moments. I think he's been unlucky at points in time this year. But if you look at Kikuchi, he's a guy that doesn't necessarily play great in that ballpark, especially when he's had the home run issues over the last couple of years. That's kind of been his biggest bugaboo. I think this is a massive win for the Blue Jays. So this is something to truly be happy about. And, you know, these are all guys that are going to rank in the top half of the Blue Jays system.
Yeah, and, you know, the Kikuchi concerns in Houston are real. Obviously, the home runs lefty to righty with the Crawford boxes in Houston. And, yeah, he's improved the strikeout rate, cut the walk rate down, but the homers are still the homers. So I certainly hope he does well. I want to see him pitch in the playoffs. You know, you kind of – you hope these end up being win-wins. The team gets something, the player you got to know and you like does well as well. But, yeah, you got to focus on what you can get back. So one of the things you guys do really well at Baseball America, and it's super helpful this time of year, is you update all the team-specific rankings and the top 30s heading into the deadline coming out of the draft so that we're not dealing with rankings from February or January like sometimes you do. Now, everyone's tried to kind of do what you guys did and catch up with that as well. But, you know, if you're looking at the MLB pipeline ranking, that could be from like February or March. You guys have these updated. Now, what that tells us is that from the Astros system, the Jays were able to pluck the number 2 prospect in Jake Bloss, the number 5 prospect in Joey Loperfido, and the number 19 prospect in Will Wagner. Obviously, not all systems are created equal. Houston had a pretty poor system, but the Jays had a pretty poor system too. Like, I think they were bottom 7 or 8 last time you guys did the full farm ranking. Just how high in the Jays system do you think you'll slot Bloss and Loperfido and to a lesser extent Wagner?
Yeah, I think, you know, outside of sort of the, once Yesevich signs, like outside of sort of that group of 4 at the top, I think there's still more upside when you're talking about Orelvis Martinez, of course, Ricky Tiedemann, who has a TJS surgery, but I think this just a means to an end. It's unfortunate. I think we've all been sort of waiting for the next shoe to drop over the last year and a half with Ricky to start over again, come back healthy. Hopefully the elbow is good. His stuff is so good. I think, you know, coming into the season, I thought this guy was right there with Skeens and Job in terms of the best pitching prospects in the game. So he's not going to rank over guys like that. But I think once you get to Arjun Amala, you even get to Yesevich, I think Bloss is right within that conversation. He's probably like a really good 4 or 5 in the system now. Loperfido, I think when you look at some of the other guys like Josh Kasevich, some of these guys, I would take Loperfido's upside because he maybe isn't, you know, as good of a defender in the infield, but he can play a few different positions. He is athletic. He does have power. He has been up to the major league level. Could be a guy that, you know, provides some value down the stretch. The other thing is the Blue Jays have done really well with sort of these kind of profiles where they're kind of grinder types that, you know, didn't sign for all really big bonuses, were sort of underrated, had great plate skills, and just tools. And I think that Loperfido is probably in that range. Wagner to me is probably more around the back of the top 10, like 10 to 13 range, somewhere in there. But you're also going to be factoring in some of the other guys they got.
Yeah.
Jonathan Class A is, you know, somebody that I know like player development is really excited about to get to work with him. He's a really, really athletic player that, you know, is maybe a little raw in terms of, you know, his outfield skills and some of that. There's power and there's speed there. I think he brings an excitement and a tool factor that we have not seen in the Blue Jays system for quite a while. So I think he's an exciting player, probably going to be within the top 10. Another guy that I want to shout out here as well is Yohendrick Pinongo. So he's a guy that I had gotten some really great feedback early in the season and in the offseason from some of the folks in the Cubs hitting development group. He made huge changes year over year. He's still pretty young. Just in terms of he had power, the bat to ball skills have taken a tremendous jump forward. The swing decisions have really taken a big step forward. He's a guy that, you know, when I look at underlying data, not just on the scouting side, but just more on the analytics side, he has, you know, checks all the boxes for what I call the big 3. And that is power, you know, it's showing a 90th percentile exit velocity above 104 miles per hour. I think his is like 107, 108. He probably has some of the higher 90th percentile exit velocities in the system now. Has, you know, plate skills in terms of, you know, bat to ball skills or average or better. And then has, you know, improving swing decisions. He's not a great defender, probably a left field only type. But I think that when you look at a guy like him and Loperfido, they add sort of that upside power thing that has really been sort of lacking in this Blue Jays system outside of like a guy like Orelvis Martinez, for quite a long time. Then the last guy that I'll shout out here is another Boston player that I like a lot, was I think with inside their top 15 or so. And that's Edison Paulino. He's young for the level, kind of gets a little buried on that Portland team, which is so stacked. I mean, the four best prospects in the system are all there. He's hitting behind them. It's a really good swing. I think there's still more projection in the body. He's a guy that when you talk to scouts that cover the Red Sox system, they like him a lot more than some of the more famous names, maybe a Cutter Coffee, some of those guys, because he's so versatile. He can play, you know, seven positions probably on the field. There's some speed there. There's some contact skills. And I think that as he grows and gets, you know, more physically mature, I think there's a chance for maybe average power as well. He kind of fits into the style of player that the Blue Jays have typically gone after in the international market. I think he's a good fit for their PD. And then you have a guy like Cutter Coffee, who sort of is a product of this Jason Ochart bat speed training that the Red Sox have really doubled down on. He added a lot of power this year. He was a guy that got a fairly big bonus and was drafted, I think, on day one a couple of years ago. So you do add some players here that I think are going to be in the top half of the system. And you have a handful of players that could potentially contribute down the stretch here in August or September, and guys that could compete for positions next year, and, you know, tradable assets. I think this is, you know, if there's another big deal coming down, Bassett, someone like that gets moved. I get the feeling that Vlad and Bo aren't going to get moved, but of course I'll say that on air and then we'll see something bigger happen. I still think that they have enough of what they had kind of referred to as, you know, the peripheral pieces, the supporting pieces that they can still trade off. We're seeing what the returns are for pitching right now. If you can move, even if you take on some money for some of these starters that maybe are getting a little bit older, can move a guy like Bassett. I mean, you saw what we got in the Kikuchi return. You've seen some of these other returns. It wouldn't shock me if they're able to pull in one of the first top 100, true top 100 prospects that's been traded so far, because we haven't had an actual top 100 prospect traded yet.
Right. The closest would be Augustin Martinez, who the Yankees gave up in the Jazz Chisholm deal. And then I believe you guys at Baseball America have Blas as the second best prospect to get dealt so far, right?
Yeah, we do. And I think there's a case that, you know, Blas could blossom. And we look back on this in 2 years, this could be a guy that blossoms into the best prospect that's been traded so far. I think the bugaboo with Augustin Ramirez is the bat's there, the contact's there, the power's there. It's a questionable catcher profile. And once you start to get into that, it's like, all right, can he play first base? Probably not a third baseman. When you start to move down the defensive spectrum from catcher and you're not a super athlete, you know, it sort of becomes a bit of an issue. But yeah, it's definitely interesting.
So that it's a lot of good information on the individuals that the Jays picked up. And there are a couple more. Fair to say that in the case of Jacob Sharp, Josh Rivera, Gilberto Bautista, those are kind of like, or I guess Bautista's so young as a pitcher, that's like a lottery ticket. But in the case of Jacob Sharp and Josh Rivera, just kind of like org depth guys for right now, unless something changes.
Yeah, and Rivera was a guy that was really highly touted out of high school, played at the University of Florida, didn't get drafted in his first draft eligible year. He was down here on the Cape, so I saw a lot of him. He's a really good defender at shortstop. He's had some progress over the last couple of years as a hitter, has added some power. Another guy that's kind of like that is RJ Schreck. Schreck is a guy that has some of the best barrel metrics in the minor leagues. I believe it was a 17% barrel rate when I checked yesterday. The expected WOBA on contact, or ex-WOBA-con, ex-WOBA-bacon, you know, you want to throw that term out there. It's a fun one. He's a guy that projects really well. What that number is it's looking at launch angles, and it's looking at exit velocities, and it's putting them into buckets of expected outcomes. He projects out really well, was already up to AA, was a guy that kind of bounced around, was at Kentucky, then ended up at Vanderbilt, you know, played a little bit longer in the minor leagues. I don't think he's that different from a player that, you know, has gotten up to the major leagues with the Padres and Graham Pauly, where, you know, sort of an older player that, you know, does have some plate skills, does have some power, is kind of interesting. It's not nothing. So are they probably more like org guys? Maybe. But once again, I think you look at the Blue Jays history, the guys that they've done really well with have been like these Spencer Horowitzes, you know, the Davis Schneiders and those types. And, you know, I think this is a good fit for the PD group.
Yeah. And that's the other component of this too, right? Is like, there's always the PD factor, the player development side. And, you know, sometimes when teams have a type that can be that can hamper you, but it also points to their philosophy, right? What do you think you can develop? And the Jays have obviously at least through the draft, focused on a lot of these higher floor, good plate discipline, good approach kind of guys, and then you hope the power comes. Interesting to see them go a little bit the other way with a couple of these guys who have the power and need to sharpen up the approach a little bit, like a Cutter Coffee. I did want to ask one follow-up on Cutter Coffee. So you guys, like you said, he was a 41st overall 2 years ago, almost a $2 million signing bonus. So a guy who had some buzz. You guys, and I know not everyone ranks the exact same at Baseball America, but you guys had him down pretty far in this write-up of, you know, the quality of prospects who got traded. Like, he's down there with Schreck and Sharp, not up with a, you know, a Paulino or a Pinango, despite having maybe a little bit more name value because Red Sox, first day pick, six games with a home run in a row a couple weeks ago. What is the sticking point for Coffee? Is it that, you know, the hit tool from a contact perspective just might not allow the power to play?
I think it could. I think some of it, too, is just trying to get a handle on the Red Sox system, which at this point is, in my opinion, is arguably the deepest system in the game. There's players that are outside of their top 30 that are guys that I think in the bottom half systems probably rank within the top 15. Some really interesting pitchers and players like that. So it's not necessarily a shot against him. I think the bigger question with Coffee is, where does he play defensively? You know, how much more is necessarily in the tank in terms of developing more power? The plate skills aren't bad. You know, I think it's a matter of not necessarily the style of player that I gravitate toward, or, you know, a lot of scouts necessarily gravitate toward, because there's not a ton of tools there and it's not like an overwhelming hit tool. But I think when we look at a system like the Red Sox from sort of like 11 on to like 40, you could really rank that system in a variety of ways. So I wouldn't necessarily put it that way. I didn't do the final rankings here on where the traded players. That's JJ Cooper that does that. And we sort of just supplant them on where their grades are. I'm typically a more harsh grader than some of my coworkers. They might give a half a grade higher than I would have.
That's
he is
fair.
A guy that I think, you know, could be an average regular.
Yeah, being a harder market just means it's even more valuable when you like a guy and you come on and tell us good things. Okay, so taking all this into account, and obviously there's still, we got 7 hours and change to the deadline here, and you haven't sat with all 30 teams and re-ranked and things like that. But to generalize, if you can, how much have the Jays improved their system here over these first five trades? Like, if you were to roughly, hey, this was their org rank before, this is maybe where I see them now. Do you have a sense of where that might land?
Yeah, I think that they were probably in the bottom five, sort of entering the deadline. At this point, you know, I don't know if they've rocketed up to like the top 15, but I think like somewhere from like 16 to 21, 22, you know, among the 30 systems is probably where they're going to rank out. I'll probably be a little higher on the system than some of my coworkers might, because I'm so familiar with like all the players that they acquired. You know, I think when you add 10 players that all could potentially rank within your top 30, you start to have more of a depth conversation. And there's also maybe another shoe to drop here in the next, as you said, 7 and change hours. And we could potentially see, you know, another or a couple of top 10 Jays prospects or future Jays prospects move into the system. And I think, you know, the way that we rank out top 30s is very top heavy. So we're looking for what teams have the most top 100 prospects, because those are the guys that when we look at the numbers, when we look at what the overall value is of those players long term, and we have a lot of historical data on this, you know, we tend to do a really good job of identifying the top of the top, right? 80% of the position players that played in the All-Star game the last 2 years were top 100 prospects. So I think when we start to see that, and we start to see some guys like Bloss that can maybe fit at the back end that are 50 or better type of grades, those guys typically are going to boost up the system a little bit. And I think if they add a couple more, we could maybe see them rank more in the mid-tier, which is a big improvement. It's been a while since the Jays have ranked in the top half of systems in terms of what they had for talent.
Yeah, it's been a minute. You know, you can get it a little bit because you've made trades and things like that. But when you look around your division and you have the fifth worst system in the American League East, and there are other high spending teams in win now mode who've done a better job. It will be nice to see them in the second tier, the second group of 10 instead of down near the bottom. Okay, Jeff, the complex league season is done. This is not trade deadline related, but any notes or anyone who, you know, you heard good buzz about from the Jays complex league or anything like that. I kind of weirdly, the timing of like draft all-star break deadline, you don't really get to put a clean bow on that complex league stuff.
No, when we were getting complex stuff, because we did have folks that were down in FCL, not myself this year. We have folks that were actually in the DSL. It's one of the weaker groups, and I think the organization as well will sort of tell you that, that it is a sort of a weaker group. They're hoping for a better class over the next couple of years. Some of the young draftees that they got are guys that maybe are in the complex next year. So there isn't a lot of sort of gems that are hiding out there. I think they had a better class last year in terms of the FCL and maybe even the DSL a little bit. But it's been a down group over the last couple of years, and I think it just comes down to where the signings are. They've had a couple of, you know, higher bonus catching prospects, which are always tough when you're going after teenage catching prospects that haven't necessarily worked out. But I think you could see that change in the next year or so, or maybe even add a couple guys that are sort of, you know, potential pieces that could be like in the FCL next year. So, no, unfortunately, there aren't a ton of standout complex guys at either the DSL or the FCL right now. But from year to year, I mean, those groups are so hit or miss, just generally, you know.
Yeah, it seems like they're all over the place. Okay, last one before I let you go here. So when you guys, JJ Cooper does this, hey, here's the list of all the prospects that are traded. Like, everyone's very familiar with the top 100 prospect list. I think we all assume you guys have a list that goes deeper than 100 because guys who are honorable mention just get cut or whatever. But then you guys are grouping it. Okay, these guys would fit in the 150 to 500 range. These guys would fit in the 500 to 1250 range. I know some of that is generalizing because, like, hey, this guy's got a 40-plus future value grade, so this is where we slot in. But how far down that list do you think we could go where you or anyone at Baseball America like have a firm opinion of like, yeah, I like this guy better than that. Like could you guys all do that probably for the top 1,000 if it's guys you've got an eye on, top 2,000? There are like 5,000-6,000 domestic prospects out there.
Yeah, I think once you get into the 400-500 range, it gets kind of messy. Because it's going to be about preferences. It's going to be about when you saw a guy, the scouts that you're in contact with, who you're talking to, you know, all that sort of stuff, I think is sort of paramount among how these discussions go. Excuse me. Bad cold coming out on the trade deadline, of course. So it's one of those things where, like, I may have somebody as a 45 high, and somebody else has them as a 40 high, and it's a half a grade, but that can move somebody down the list from 500 to 900. We always sort of say that in the top 100, it's more like 75 to like 160 is really like one tier. When you think about how many players there are in the minor leagues, right? And how close those guys are. And I think it's sort of similar. Once you get into sort of the 45 high range, you know, there's a lot of ambiguity as to like who's better than who. And some of it's going to come down to the type of skills that you like, the type of tools that you like, the type of players that you go after. I tend to go after big athletes. I want guys that throw hard with a good breaking ball in terms of pitchers. Not everybody necessarily looks at it that way. A lot of other people are like, I like command. I like guys that have starter traits. And, you know, for me, I feel like that's sort of what the job of PD is, what the job of being in the minor leagues is to improve those areas. And, you know, become sort of less raw, whether it's from a hitting perspective or from a pitchability perspective.
Well, that's helpful, helpful context. And yeah, the trying to figure out everyone's preferences team wise, Baseball America wise, it's always fun. Jeff, thanks so much for taking the time out this morning, man. I know it's been a busy couple days here.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Jeff Ponce of Baseball America. Make sure you're checking out all their great stuff. They're breaking down every trade throughout the trade deadline. They're ranking every prospect that's been dealt so far here. And yeah, pretty optimistic stuff from a guy who knows the Astros system, Red Sox system, Cubs system all pretty well, in addition to the Blue Jays system. So that is pretty exciting. Jake Bloss, Joey Loprofito, Will Wagner, guys to get excited about. Yohindrick Pinango, Edison Paulino. That's a good list of guys. And again, the context through all this is, yeah, you didn't want to be sellers. It's a failure that the Blue Jays are in a position to sell, but having a pretty good deadline so far as sellers go, but a lot of work to be done for 2025 to compete still. So you can hold all of those thoughts at the same time. Let's hold those thoughts through a commercial break here. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to John Morosi. We'll sprinkle in some of your texts as well. You can text us, as always, at 590-590. Standard data and message rates may apply. We'll answer a bunch of your text questions, your thoughts on the trades, etc., throughout the course of the show. But first, take a break, and then John Morosi joins us as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Covering the Blue Jays from an analytical perspective, Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. It is the trade deadline. We are with you until 2 p.m., at which point Ailish Justin will take you to 4 p.m., and then Blair and Barker will take you through the deadline. If you haven't had enough of me after 4 hours by 2 p.m., I will also be back on Blue Jay Central at 6 o'clock to talk about all this deadline stuff and maybe react to some last-minute stuff. The Jays, of course, have picked up 11 prospects over the last couple of days over the course of 5 trades, sending out 4 expiring contracts, as well as Nate Pearson. Pretty good haul. We just talked to Jeff Ponce of Baseball America, someone who knows the Astros, Cubs, and Red Sox systems very well, in addition to the Jays. And he's pretty impressed with the work the Jays have been able to do restocking that farm system. Now, of course, a lot of prospects are lottery tickets that might take a couple years. And you know, of this haul of 11 guys, if 3 of them turn into major leaguers regularly, you're probably pretty happy with this deadline in retrospect. None of this stuff means that, hey, this guy's slotted into the 5 spot in your batting order as an everyday guy next year, or he's your ace next year, and the work for 2025 is done. Nobody wanted to be in a seller's position to begin with. But you're here, and they've done what looks like a pretty good job. They also split a doubleheader yesterday. They play again today, by the way. They have a 6:35 game. It'll be Chris Bassett against Corbin Burns. And then tomorrow at 12:30, it's a TBA, because that was supposed to be Yusei Kikuchi against Grayson Rodriguez. Yusei Kikuchi is now a Houston Astro. Let's see what John Morosi of MLB Network thinks about it. John, good morning. How are we doing, man?
Good morning. Hey, to me, Blake, this is like Christmas morning for me. I love it. We got from now until 6 p.m. And of course, it usually deals with trickle past the final horn that we'll hear about till about 6:30. So this is one of my more enjoyable 7.5 hour segments of the baseball year.
It's great. And I got to get it going with a Canada basketball win in the Olympics right before we came on air. So we're rolling today, John. All right, let's talk about the Yusei Kikuchi trade. You tweeted out last night, hey, pretty good return. The industry seems to be, as far as these things go and as far as there can be a consensus, the consensus seems to be the Jays did pretty well in that Yusei Kikuchi trade. What did you make of it? What have you been hearing about it since?
They did an excellent job, Blake. I think when you look at the different prospects that were out there, I think there was a thought that Lo Perfido by himself would have been a tremendous haul in this trade for Kikuchi, and he was one of 3 that the Jays were able to obtain. So I think that in general, the front office did an exceptional job. They've been under a lot of pressure. We know that's been the theme of this year, how much pressure they've been under. And yet in that environment, they did a very good job yesterday. I think Jays fans can be and should be quite proud of what had happened yesterday, and a trade that I think worked out well. I think honestly, the Astros probably saw more in terms of what Kikuchi can do for them in the next couple months than what he's done even for the Jays in the last month or so. He's struggled a bit. I was honestly getting a little concerned about what the Jays might have been able to get for him, just given his struggles in the last month or so. But again, a great job by the front office. I think Lo Perfido, I'll be curious to see what the coming weeks will bring. He should be, in my estimation, right in the Jays' everyday lineup. And that's what makes me wonder, when you consider where this roster could go in the next 24 hours or less than that, before 6 p.m. Eastern time, how many players might get moved out. And IKF is a possibility. Certainly right now he's been playing in Buffalo, working his way back. It's just so many variables right now with all the trades they've made about what this roster will look like tomorrow. let alone an opening day of 2025. So I think in general, the Jays have done a very good job. Class A they brought in from the Mariners trade, he can make an impact in the major leagues right now. If you're a Jays fan, I think you've gotten yourself to the place of believing that it's now time to turn the page and see what this club can look like on opening day of next year. And I think one of the positive parts of it is they've done so well with the moves they've made, at least with respect to Kikuchi, that the notion of having to feel pressure to move Vlad and go to that dramatic length, I think has been reduced. I think that things that all along were trending in the direction of him staying with the Jays through this season, I think it's especially the case now because you've done well enough with your other moves that you can now look at opening day of next year and say to yourself, with the players they brought in, the moves they might make this offseason, that there is a credible path to putting together a good at least first half of 2025 and then reevaluating your team at next year's trade deadline as opposed to looking at this as being a dramatic deadline that would signal a long rebuild. That has not been the case because I think the Jays have done a very good job of managing the assets that they've had in place.
So I do want to do a little bit more on the Jays stuff, of course, but I did on the Kikuchi price tag. Why do you think that the Astros paid the price that they paid when we see, you know, the White Sox trade a year and a half of Eric Fetty with a year and a half of Michael Kopech and the Tommy Pham flyer, and they get less back for that entire haul? Obviously, Kikuchi maybe a higher upside there, but a lot more control going out. You know, I guess we'll see where the Jack Flaherty price is or the Blake Snell price or whatever for a comparison point. But why do you think the Jays were able to kind of get this surprising level of return from the Astros? Like, is Dana Brown in that desperate a situation here with where the Astros are?
The Astros have a very committed and driven owner. And at the end of the day, when you're dealing with an ownership group that is desperate to win and to keep this ALCS streak going, sometimes you overpay. And I think the Astros overpaid. In the same way that the Phillies probably overpaid to get Carlos Estevez, they've got a veteran GM in Dave Dombrowski and an owner who really wants to win. And I think that it's so interesting, Blake, that the MLB trade deadline, the more I've covered it, the more I come to believe that it's not a completely efficient market in the way that if you're managing your stock portfolio and the ticker says that the price of it is this, that's the price today. That's what people are paying. That's not the way that it works here. Sometimes you get in a closed environment where we don't always know what the dynamic price is of a player, that with 30 GMs, that things sometimes get skewed a little bit. And I think that in this case, you had a very motivated buyer who I really believe that the Tigers could have gotten this same package for Jack Flaherty. No one has said that to me directly, but I believe that they could have. And I would have said it was a strong return for Jack Flaherty. And I would put Flaherty ahead of Kikuchi right now, just based on his performance has been more consistent. He doesn't maybe strike out as many guys as Kikuchi does on a rate basis standpoint, but I would have put Flaherty ahead of Kikuchi. I just think that the Blue Jays, to their credit, were dealing with the right team at the right time. And I think that Ross Atkins was able to, have the best price tag. I believe, by the way, that this was Ross's deal and not James Click. I understand there may have actually been a conflict of interest there to where maybe he wasn't going to be the one on the phone because of that. And so I think he probably took a bit of a step back and let Ross Atkins deal directly with Dana Brown on this one. And certainly Jeff Bagwell's got a big voice there in Houston, and Jim Crane has a big voice in Houston. I think this was all a collective effort on the part of the Astros, but they certainly, in my estimation, overpaid, and Joey Loperfido is exactly the kind of guy. So the pitching side of things is encouraging too, but Loperfido, when you look at this Jays team, you've been asking yourself, who is going to be that next group of position players to help hopefully bring a more competitive Jays team in 2025? And Loperfido is exactly that kind of a bat. And that's to me what really encourages me the most, is that the Jays have clearly shown that they know what they've needed to do. And in Class A and Loperfido, you've got two guys who I believe could be theoretically, in the Jays opening day lineup in 2025. And that is, I think, a really strong return with still several hours to go before the deadline.
And yeah, the focus is very quickly going to shift here from, hey, you had a good deadline when you weren't supposed to be sellers. Now, how do you add for 2025? And obviously, prospect capital helps, guys who can be inexpensive bench pieces or everyday regulars. How do you feel like, let's assume Vlad is staying put, who, by the way, is on the heater to end all heaters right now, is now hitting .311 on the year, back on pace for 30 home runs, OPS up over 900. He's either making the case that you better keep me and extend me, or he's making the case that you better trade for me. One of the two. But let's assume Vlad's back, Bo's back because he's on the IL here. How do you feel about the position the Blue Jays will be working from to retool for 2025? Given, you know, they're probably going to have $50, maybe $60 million to spend in free agency, depending on what else they do here, and the system a little better stocked, but no. You know, they've only subtracted from the major league roster so far, at least in terms of proven guys. How much work do you think the Jays will have to do? What kind of position do you think they're in to be able to do that work and compete again in 2025?
Well, they'll need to get some starting pitching in the market, clearly, to replace Kikuchi. And Yadier Rodriguez, obviously, is someone that they will hope to count on more next season. But if you're a Jays fan looking for some hope, and this is how I look at things here, that they are putting before themselves the task of doing something that they have done well. They have done the free agent pitching acquisitions with Bassett and Gausman in particular. That has been a strength of this front office. You could argue that the position player side has been a bit more challenging for them, but they have done this well. This is something that they do well. And they may even be able to, and this is interesting, in this trade market, which would really sort of pique my curiosity here, they might be able to actually, even before 6 p.m. tonight, get a controllable starter. Why not call the Marlins about Rodgers or other teams? And this is one thing that we've noticed this year in the marketplace. We have seen buyer and buyer trades, and we have seen seller and seller trades. The Cubs and the Rays, for example, that has happened. Why not? And again, it might be a surprise, but why not call up the Rays and ask about Zach Littell, who's put together a pretty solid season? Now that you have more prospects to move, you could either package the ones that you've gotten or potentially be more open-minded to moving others to get some controllable pitching. Consider the next several hours. Now that you've done a pretty good job of moving some veteran players out, consider this to be the first salvo of your offseason. And be creative here. So that's where I would say, and certainly some of the pitching they got back from Houston, I think certainly fits that description. But look at next year's rotation. And if there's a controllable arm out there who you like, and I'm not going to say Tarek Skubal of the Tigers, it's not at that level, but why not call the Angels about a Tyler Anderson? There are some different players who are still under control for next year that if you believe you're in, and I would say this, as long as Vlad and Bo are on the roster and as long as Bassett and Gausman are on the roster, you are telling the industry and your fans that you're still in it for next year. So if that's the case, own that and consider the next several hours to be your first effort at making a competitive rotation for next season. And so I would not be surprised if they make a very clever play at a controllable starter, because why not? Your 2025 team still should be a contender.
Yeah, and that would be a fun way to end these couple of days here. There's also the possibility they do some low-level selling still. Kevin Kiermaier and Trevor Richards are pending free agents. I don't imagine there are robust markets for them, but maybe they find a home. I know you had tweeted there is interest in Chad Green and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. IKF is supposed to start at shortstop today for the Buffalo Bisons in what could be his last rehab game. Both of those guys with a 2025 contract at 10.5 for Chad Green and 7.5 for Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. While the Jays have maintained, yeah, we're selling 2024 expirings. I think that's probably a little loose when it comes to guys like that. We saw them move Nate Pearson. Do you think there would be a market? What do you think the market would be like for a Chad Green or an Isaiah Kiner-Falefa right now?
Right. Well, it's a great question, Blake. I think that it probably not quite as high as it was certainly for Kikuchi, just based on what the rental starting pitching market is like. But they could do very well. They could add in, I think, some additional depth of players that can make an impact for them on next year's roster. Looking at Chad Green in particular, a reliever like him is never going to be more valuable than he is on this day. the trade deadline conversation for the controllable reliever who's been a closer, shown that he can close. Now, certainly he has some value to the Jays because he could be their closer next season. But I look at a team like the Yankees who are still looking to add one more reliever. And they, by the way, know Chad Green well from, of course, having had him in the past. So there's that familiarity that, that Chad Green, if he comes back to the Yankees, would offer. I think the Boston Red Sox are looking to add some relief pitching help as well. It's a team like, I would say, the Houston Astros, if they're going to, again, I'm not saying that they're going to add in one more trade between Houston and Toronto, but they are looking to add some relief pitching help because of where their bullpen has struggled at times. This is, I think, on this day in particular, this is the day where the offers for Chad Green will be the best. And there are probably other teams. I would mention the Mariners as being another one who, of course, the Jays have already dealt with in this cycle. The Mariners are a team that may want to add one more bat. Would that be more likely to be an infielder? Potentially, if that's the case, IKF could be a fit over there. There's a lot of different teams right now. The Diamondbacks want to add, I think, some more marginal players around the horn. This is a good time, I think, to move both those players. And if the Jays are encouraged to do that, Blake, it's not just the return they'll get for them, but you now would therefore add, if you add up those two salaries for 2025, you now have that amount of money to do some good things with in free agency. So I think I like the way the Jays have just added some new flexibility and optionality into what they're doing. And as disappointing as the season has been for the Jays, the last several days, I think, have been quite encouraging.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. It's, you didn't want to be here, but you're making the most of it now that you're here. Outside of Toronto, John, when you look at the teams that did work the last couple of days, the teams that still have work to do, who do you think needs to do the most still today? Like, which of these buyers are you looking at most closely? Like, you know, Yankees add Jazz Chisholm, still have some holes. Dodgers add some utility pieces, but haven't really made that big swing. Who are you looking at most closely these next, 6 hours and 45 minutes?
Yes, starting pitching market, I think, and those teams that need to add a starter, the Los Angeles Dodgers are at the top of the list for me. I know they've made some different moves, but I thought that with Fetty going yesterday that they were going to be the team that wound up with Fetty because I think he would have addressed a lot of their issues. I go back and look at some of the postseason records of the Dodgers in recent years, Blake, and the Dodgers have played 15 straight playoff games, 15-1-5, in which their starting pitcher has not gotten it out in the sixth inning or later. That's a long streak of not being able to take you deep in a game. Now, I understand that some of the pitching philosophy in the postseason is to not get caught with a bad matchup and to have it maybe be only two times through the lineup. I get all that. But when you constantly pull your starter early, you start chasing the series with your bullpen already being taxed, and that is no way to win a World Series. So the Dodgers, I believe, need help. The Baltimore Orioles do as well. The Tigers loom as a potential seller or partner for both of those teams, to be honest with you, with Tarek Skubal, if there's a blockbuster, or Jack Flaherty on the more mid-range type of a move. So that's a possibility as well. I'll also look at other teams in the American League. I think Seattle's done quite well to this point in time with the moves they've already made, including Justin Turner from the Jays. But they need, I believe, one more bat, potentially one more relief pitcher, too. So there's a lot of different potential moves out there, Blake, and it's going to be a very, very fun, 6-plus hours between now and the deadline.
Yeah, it sure is. And I hear your phone buzzing, John, so I should probably let you go here and get on with the reporting. Yeah,
who knows who that is? It might be my wife wondering what's going on and where I am right now, or it might be a GM telling me something. I will probably hang up. And
conference
let you know
in Chris Getz right now. Let's go. Let's see what the Garrett Crochet news is. Thanks so much, John.
Thanks, Blake. All the best.
John Morosi of MLB Network, of NHL Network as well, one of our favorite guests. So lots still to come today, of course. 6 hours and 43 minutes of deadline here. And then, as John mentioned, things always tend to trickle in a little later after that. We're going to take a break. We are going to talk to Caitlin McGrath around 11:30, but I need a beverage right now, so we'll take this break early. We'll also answer some of your texts on the other side. You can keep texting us 590, 590. Standard data and messaging rates may apply. We will take your questions, your comments, your thoughts on the trades, where the Jays stack up right now, what you'd like to see them target, etc. All that stuff we will continue to sprinkle in throughout the show. We're with you till 2 o'clock. We got a loaded list of guests. Caitlin's going to join us. Arden's going to join us. Robert Murray, Ben Clemens, Anthony Castrovince, Chris Black, whoever else stumbles in. There's probably people in the hallway right now who have a take on what the Jays got back and want to talk about Jake Bloss. So we'll take a break. When we come back, answer some of your texts to 590-590. Talk to Caitlin McGrath about the scene down in Baltimore yesterday as the Jays said goodbye to Justin Turner and Yusei Kikuchi. All that's next as Jays Talk Plus Deadline Edition continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network at Sportsnet 360.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus Deadline Edition. I'm Blake Murphy, a helpful lyric from Death Cab for Cutie. There, we've got time to start again. It's not what you wanted this deadline to look like when we set out at the start of the season, making fairly good chicken salad so far, if you know that saying. We're going to talk to Caitlin McGrath about it and a bunch of other people throughout the course of this show. But right now, we're going to take a look at our text line, see what you guys think about some of this. You can text us to 590-590. Standard message and data rates may apply. And since I started saying that, you guys have started texting less. You should know your own phone plans and things like that. But yeah, fire away. 590-590. We'll get to them all throughout the last 2.5 hours here of this show. Thad in South Dakota couldn't text in, so he DM'd over Twitter. If you're in South Dakota, I forgive you for not being able to text in. He asked the odds of Kikuchi returning in Toronto in free agency this offseason. I don't know, 20%. These things, it's nice lip service. It's cool that the relationship was great. Obviously, Kikuchi liked it here. We liked having him here. The team liked having him here. We being the fan base. I'm not a part of the team, obviously. The Jays are going to have a need at starting pitching. But as Shai Davidi laid out for us, as you work through these things, you know, if the Jays only have 50, 60 million to spend in this offseason, and they have a couple starters locked up and have acquired a couple young starters, is that the best use of the money? It's entirely possible. Starting pitching depth has been a big weakness the last couple of years. Obviously, the starting pitching has been good, but the depth beyond those top four guys has really struggled. So is your money best spent on one guy like that? Is it best spent refocusing on the offense that's been so weak the last 2 years? Is it better spread out across depth? Those are the things we're going to have to let settle after the deadline here. But yeah, I'd say the chances of him coming back are non-zero. Sean in Air asks, can we include Mitch Marner in any Jays deal? I'd have to consult the cross-sport collective bargaining agreement that I've only made up for fun on my own. There were a couple texts the other day that we didn't... So here's something to contextualize what the Jays got back for Yusei Kikuchi. Kevin from Toronto asked a question the other day that I didn't get a chance to answer. And it was, do you think teams view Kikuchi as long relief or left-handed middle relief arm given his profile as a starter? And I would have said, no, they view him as a starter. But that ability to move a guy to the bullpen is always a valuable option to have if you are, you know, slotting in as a team's fourth best starter instead of their second best starter or something like that. Obviously, the Astros, given the price they paid, very much view him as a starter and probably a guy who starts meaningful playoff games for them. Now, would that have been the case for everyone? I don't know, but it only takes one. It only took the Houston Astros. Mitch in Scarborough asks, where does the Blue Jays farm system rank after the recent deals? That's something we won't know for sure until we get through the deadline here. Obviously, we're taking a closer look at the Blue Jays farm system changes rather than other teams. To give you a gauge, though, on something like that, Fangraphs tries to put a value on prospect systems, and they have increase the Blue Jays from 25th pre-deadline to 21st right now. That might not sound a lot, but you're going from near the bottom of the league to that kind of middle third. We talked to Jeff Ponce of Baseball America earlier in the show, and he said something similar. He'd probably have them, you know, again, things can change between now and 6 o'clock. Got to sit down with every farm system and re-rank, but it feels like the Blue Jays have gone from a bottom five, you know, 24, 25, 26 kind of farm system into that 16 to 21 range is what Jeff said. So Fangraphs has them around 21 now. We'll see if Eric Loggenhagen tweaks that at all. We'll talk to Kylie McDaniel on the show later in the week, by the way, and see what he thinks about it. So yeah, the farm system is not a top 10 farm system. You weren't going to be able to do that in one trade deadline with only rentals. You know, you would have had to put Vlad and Bo on the table and things like that to get to where you're a top 10 farm system. But going from near the bottom of the league to somewhere in that meaty middle is still meaningful, especially given that you've spread these prospects out across levels. You got some longer term flyers, some upside plays, and then you've got some nearer term guys that could maybe help you the rest of this season and certainly compete to help you in 2025. Let's see what our pal Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic thinks about it. Caitlin, long day yesterday. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good. Had a nice sleep last night, albeit a late night, but ready for probably another long day today.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I'd imagine there is some sort of Ross Atkins chat in there somewhere. There is also a lot of activity that could happen between now and 6 p.m. And then there's a baseball game that we got to play as well. We kind of forgot about the two baseball games yesterday. Like, even though it was a long day, they feel like they were not all that consequential. Caitlin, a moment, though, for the unbelievable day Vladimir Guerrero Jr. had and really how well he's played lately. Can you remember seeing Vlad this locked in since that 2021 season?
No. Yeah, I think that is the best comparable. He looks like he's at that level again, and he just looks like he is playing very free and easy, which I think is when he's at his best. And you can tell when he's like firing on all cylinders because the ball off his bat just sounds completely different. Like the home run that he hit in the second game, like I was looking down at my computer, and I admit, like I was probably mostly staring at my computer that day, and wasn't really watching the game that closely. But when I heard that ball, I was just like, oh, that's gone. Like, so that's when you can really like kind of tell with him that he's just in another zone, on another level, really locked in right now. And yeah, hopefully he can kind of carry it to the end of the season. And, you know, that's maybe one of the silver linings of this season for, you know, the Blue Jays fans, is that he looks like he's, you know, back to one of the best hitters in the major leagues.
Caitlin, one other note from yesterday's game and kind of the transaction whirlwind of a doubleheader day and needing an extra guy up. Yariel Rodriguez only went 2/3 of an inning. Obviously, the scary moment with James McCann there. Given how he pitched lately, I would have thought maybe there was some leash to have a bad start or whatever. But he got optioned after the game. Bowden Francis got recalled. Does that suggest to you, or were you able to ask after the game that Bowden Francis is going to take that rotation spot for a little bit here, because Yariel's got to stay down for the 15 days now, barring injury?
Well, I heard that there was like a loophole, and I didn't look into this myself, honestly, but there was some talk amongst some of the media that there might be a loophole in which if a team trades a player, a player can be recalled from the minors. I don't know if that is in the rule
book. That has happened over the last couple of weeks with the Blue Jays. So it's certainly a possibility. And I know the other loophole is like the Mitch White corollary, like Jake Bloss. Had he been optioned, you know, he could come back up before the 15 days and stuff. So I think a trade does allow you to do that. It's still a little, it does seem like it's a little, I don't know, a little curious or a little bit open, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have time to ask. There was just a lot going on yesterday. We'll have a better chance to figure out what the Blue Jays are planning in terms of the rotation. But yeah, I mean, it could be Bowden taking that spot. I think that he looked okay yesterday. Obviously gave up some hard contact, but kind of steadied himself and was able to give the Blue Jays, you know, a good outing in the second game. And, you know, I think the Blue Jays are interested in seeing what he can do and giving him a little runway again. And obviously, yeah, I mean, they could get a look at Bloss too, see what he has. Obviously they're acquiring him because they probably think he can be inserted right into the rotation or is nearly ready for a rotation spot. So yeah, maybe it's just about giving Yariel a breather in the minors once again, and kind of seeing what they have with some of these other pieces.
So, Caitlin, obviously, like you said, there was a lot going on yesterday. I certainly understand not asking, hey, who's going to start 6 days from now post-game with everything else that was going on. What was the vibe between games when the news comes down that Yusei Kikuchi has been dealt? I know you guys spoke to him through his translator, Yusuke, yesterday, and then John Schneider and a couple of his teammates obviously talked about it. And we had kind of, you know, we had the last week or so on that homestand to talk to guys about Yusei Kikuchi. What was the feeling around that trade yesterday?
Yeah, I think that there was probably, like, at least talking to Yusei. Now, granted, we got him probably, you know, 2 hours after he learned of the trade. I think he learned of the trade just before that second game started, about like half an hour to 20 minutes before that game started. And we're not talking to him till, you know, midway through the game. So he'd had some time to sort of digest, as had Schneider, who we talked to after the game. But to me, it's, I think that Yusei seemed sort of more emotional and upset last week after his last start. That was probably a more emotional time. Granted, I think when he said goodbye to his teammates in the clubhouse, which we obviously aren't privy to, that was emotional. But when, by the time that we talked to him, it honestly felt like it was a little bit of relief. Not that he's glad to be going, but just like, okay, now I know where I'm going. The uncertainty is gone. I can just kind of now get back into my routine, go to the Astros, you know, help them down the stretch, you know, just focus on pitching, not all this uncertainty like swirling around him. So to me, it seemed like even Schneider was sort of like, you know, that we were sad to see him go, but, you know, kind of ready to move on from this period of uncertainty, which has obviously been kind of stressful for the team.
Yeah, I guess, you know, in the case of Kikuchi, 3 years here, well, like Justin Turner, just the rental piece, maybe dug a little deeper with the Danny Jansen one on the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that even Schneider admitted that, like, just because of the history, right? Like, yes, everybody, you know, loves Yusei. Everybody really appreciated the time that Justin Turner was here. But I think Danny Jansen had been in the organization for 11 years. And he had basically, you know, known John Schneider for all 11 of those years and been very close throughout them. So, yeah, it cuts a little deeper, just kind of more of an org guy that you've, you know, you have hopes that he can just be in the organization basically his entire career, and obviously that's not going to happen now. Today it feels like it'll just be, you know, we'll see. I don't know that there's going to be, I think the emotional, the emotions kind of peaked at Danny Jansen, and now it just feels like, okay, let's get this deadline over with to some extent. Let's just kind of see who's left on this Blue Jays team and what they can focus on in the last 2 months, which is probably seeing what they've got and some of the new pieces and seeing some of their own young players, you know, continue to develop at the major league level.
So, yeah, let's talk about some of those new pieces. Obviously, a pretty good return for Yusei Kikuchi. You know, your colleague Chandler Rome kind of laying it out there when he first reported that there were two other pieces in the Jake Bloss, along with Jake Bloss, rather, that was pretty notable. And then Keith Law writing up over at The Athletic as well, just how much he liked this deal, even if none of, you know, I think he had Bloss as a 4-5 starter and Loperfido and Wagner as, you know, potential high-end bench guys, still a pretty good return for a rental. What do you make of the job the Jays have done so far in, you know, five trades now, bringing back in 11 prospects? Obviously, you know, we can't know everything about every prospect, but from a process standpoint, what they've been able to do so far at the deadline here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they've tried to make the best of obviously a bad situation, which is kind of what I wrote about. Like, you know, I think that, you know, ultimately this deadline just represents, you know, a season gone terribly wrong for the Blue Jays. And, you know, we can't kind of forget that. But at the same time, like, you know, once you're forced into the position of seller, you might as well do the best job you can as a seller and, you know, do as well as you can and get as many pieces back. The Blue Jays obviously kind of stated that one of their targets was to get guys in the upper minor leagues, guys that are potentially nearly ready for the major leagues that can help them. Obviously the Blue Jays, we all know that they're trying to make a quick turnaround, compete again next year. So they want guys that can potentially help them. And certainly in the Astros deal, you have three guys that, you know, two of them, you know, the pitcher and what's the other guy's name? Sorry.
Loperfido.
Loperfido. Yeah. So he's obviously been in the majors as well this year. So you have guys that can help immediately. And I think Wagner is in AAA and hitting very well there. So another guy that seems very close, Class A, who came in the Yimi Garcia deal, also a guy that's hit the majors and seems very close or seems near ready. Again, all those guys kind of seem like, you know, bench pieces that could maybe develop into a little bit more. You're not necessarily getting, you know, star players back, but that's to be understood when you're only really dealing with rental players and relievers and guys with little control. I we'll see what the Blue Jays do today. I don't anticipate they're going to, like, you know, change course and all of a sudden start trading, you know, Bo and Vlad. And, well, certainly not those two. You know, I think there's a question about, well, what do they do with Bassett? There's some excitement seeing what starting pitching is getting at the deadline. And, you know, maybe the Blue Jays do reconsider Bassett, but I doubt it. It doesn't sound like that's going to happen. And the Blue Jays, you know, aren't necessarily a team that, you know, changes their mind quickly. They seem to be a pretty process-oriented team that needs to think everything through. So I don't anticipate like a last-minute pivot here. But, yeah, I mean, I think that they, again, they've stated their ambition to compete again next year. And it seems like they've collected some pieces that can hopefully help them do that.
Yeah, so let's take a look at what that looks like. So, again, Lo Profito, it sounds like he's going to join the team here at the major league level. Bloss, we'll see. Shai Davidi said he thinks he'll be in AAA, but obviously that's a guy who's pitched in the majors already this year, so potentially relevant there. But let's look ahead to 2025. You know, none of these guys changing the outlook of the team for 2025 necessarily, other than helping with, you know, inexpensive depth and potential guys competing for a roster spot. When you look and you reset at what the Jays roster looks like for 2025, where the holes are, obviously today, this week is a little bit of a start toward that 2025. But, you know, when we make that pivot, where does this team most need to address and most need to focus on when they do finally turn the eye to 2025, if that's not today?
I mean, I do think they have a lot of work to do. I mean, you can't, and I've written this before too, you can't sincerely just say, oh, we're going to run it back again. I mean, obviously that did not work this year. And so I think there needs to be significant changes. Obviously they need more offense. You know, Vlad, hopefully he can carry on what he's done this season, late in the season, and carry it on to next year. You hope that Bo can rebound, maybe get healthy, completely healthy in the offseason, and be able to have a better look, more like himself. You hope that George doesn't get off to a slow start. You hope that, you know, the recent performance of him is more reflective of where he's at as opposed to what he showed in the first you know, 2.5 months of the season. So yeah, you hope that those guys are more consistent for you, but you know, you need probably help at catcher. You need more, you need more offense. You need to basically rebuild your entire bullpen. You know, I don't even know many guys who will be left over that don't have question marks. I guess we'll see if Chad Green remains after today. Jordan Romano, obviously still under team control next year, but he's coming off a significant injury. You'll need to fill in your starting rotation. Again, you've collected some pieces for that, but probably you need another guy to sign in free agency. Maybe it's Yusei, maybe he comes back. There was a lot of talk of that, honestly, more than you usually expect when a guy's getting traded. So there's significant work. This isn't, you know, this isn't going to be a layup for them next season. I think that it's actually going to be a very important, impactful, significant offseason to see if the Blue Jays can truly rebuild a team and compete in, obviously, a very stacked American League East.
Yeah, it's, like you said, a lot of work to do. The bullpen could be, I mean, 8 entirely new guys if Chad Green goes here. I guess that's the other thing for today is obviously Trevor Richards and Kevin Kiermaier are expiring contracts. I've kind of asked our Jays people this, and I think you and I talked about it at the ballpark last week. Would you imagine they listen on Chad Green and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, even though those guys do have contracts into 2025? Or although I guess the counter would be you just kind of laid out how much work there is to do for 2025 still. Maybe they lean toward just keeping those guys and having that work done. What's your feel on the possible availability of that pair?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's a bit of a toss-up. Like, I think that if the Blue Jays were to start hearing offers that, you know, they couldn't refuse, I think there's a good chance that those guys could be traded. I think probably I would put Green ahead of IKF. Just because it just seems like the market for relief pitching and for pitching in general seems to be a little bit more, you know, desperate. So maybe they could get a better deal. And yeah, I mean, just for relievers in general, like it's really hard to predict them year to year. Look at, you know, the Blue Jays bullpen is a perfect example of that. So I would say it's toss up. I think, you know, Richards and Kiermaier probably more likely, you know, probably Richards just again, because it's like, you know, a team's going to take a guy that is, you know, rental for 2 months, might as well. He's a guy that strikes out a lot of batters. And Kiermaier, you know, it's like another one that's kind of hard to predict. I mean, obviously he said he's going to retire after the season, and he's not the player that he used to be, certainly offensively. Defensively, he still looks great. So if there's a team that could use him, you know, late in games or just kind of wants him on the team, then maybe someone will take him. I imagine the Blue Jays will have to probably eat most of that money, though, for him to get any sort of decent return. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. But, yeah, I mean, potentially 2 more trades, potentially 4 more trades. I think it could be anywhere in that ballpark.
Push the number higher, Caitlin. 6 more trades. Let's go. We didn't necessarily think Nate Pearson was outbound. Let's see. Let's see how much we can push it. Caitlin, you've done a lot of great work at The Athletic over the all season, but over the last couple of days in particular. What are you looking forward to the rest of the way here? I know this is a piece you wrote a couple weeks ago, but we have a little bit more clarity now on what this roster is going to look like, who will be here, who won't be here. When it comes to those individual performances, those individual battles for spots and early auditions for 2025, what are you most looking forward to once we put the deadline behind us here?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably seeing some of those guys that, you know, I've enjoyed watching so far, Spencer Horwitz, Leo Jimenez, seeing what they can do with continued playing time. You know, obviously I'll be interested to see who the Blue Jays call up out of their new kind of crop of prospects. Again, those guys that I mentioned before who are more or less close to major league ready, you know, seeing if they call any of those guys up and what they can do. I've heard Crosse is a kind of interesting player, a lot of speed, a lot of skill, more power than you expect out of a small frame. So kind of interested in those guys and just getting to know them a little bit and seeing what they can bring. So, and probably just honestly down the stretch, seeing what else Vlad can do. I think there was a time where we were like, is he going to hit 20 home runs this year? And now he looks like he's on track for 30 plus. So honestly, I'm interested to see how good Vladdy can be this year, where his numbers end up. He's just so fun to watch when he's on this level. So that's another thing that I think, that I'm looking forward to in the last 2 months.
What are you looking forward to the rest of this week? You've got a couple more days in Baltimore, and then what I believe is a New York off day.
Yeah, a New York off day.
Rare.
I know. So that'll be fun. I'm taking the train from Baltimore to New York on Thursday. So I always like doing that too, because I feel like taking the train is just like the most relaxed form of travel. You know what I mean? Like it's, you don't have to get there that early. It's not like the airport with all this, you know, security and customs and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, you don't have to drive. You're not, you know, thinking of anything. You just lay back on the train. I don't know. I just find it kind of a relaxing form of travel. So, yeah. And then going to New York on an off day, which is fun. So a lot of things planned for that weekend. And, yeah, looking forward to that.
Well, I hope you have a good time with it. You are due one more very heavy work day today, I'd imagine. So I will let you go and let you get on with it. Caitlin McGrath, thank you so much for taking the time out.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic. Make sure you're subscribed over there, following all her great work. Some good stuff on Yusei Kikuchi's last day with the team, Danny Jansen's last day with the team over the weekend, and then teaming up with her Athletic colleagues to break all of that stuff down. Chandler Rome on the Astros side had some sticker shock with the Yusei price, and then Keith Law on the kind of prospect and org side liked the return for the Blue Jays, thought the Astros overpaid there, which isn't everything. I mean, you're in a contention window. You lead the division. You pay what it takes to get your guy. But if you're on the Blue Jays side of things, you probably like that people think you got too much back for your guy. We're gonna bring on some more guests, obviously, in the second half of the show. We'll be with you until 2 o'clock today. We'll take more of an MLB-wide lens for a little bit. Around 12:15, we'll have Arden on at noon, but then we'll talk to Robert Murray, Ben Clemens, Anthony Kastrovitz, get kind of the lay of the land all around Major League Baseball. And throughout the show, we'll continue to take a look at your texts, 2590, 590, or some of them coming in on Twitter as well, although text is a little easier. David, from Etobicoke asked, after Glaber's Yankees statement that he's unwilling to move positions to help the team, is IKF more likely there? I don't know. I mean, the fact that they played Jazz Chisholm at third base for the first time in his career suggests to me that they need some help on the infield still. Gleyber Torres doesn't want to move back to third base. I'm sure they would love a guy who can handle a little bit of third base. We saw the Dodgers go out and get a couple infielders yesterday in Ahmed Rosario and Tommy Edman. So there's a market for guys like that, certainly. IKF has obviously played there before, so potential relationship and familiarity there. I don't know if Glaber's comments specifically make that more likely. It's probably something that they already knew or were aware of, or you just tell the guy, hey, you're playing third baseman. It's where we put you in the lineup. You don't have a choice. But yeah, I would imagine, given the trades we've seen the last couple of days, there is at least some market for Isaiah Kiner-Falefa around the league. Drew on Twitter asked if I see any change in the coaching staff for next year and what did the Jays do for their bullpen. Coaching staff, I mean, you're always going to have some tweaks here and there. I think, you know, you look at who's had success and who hasn't on the player side, and you try to trace that to which coaches they work with or maybe which process has worked well. You know, Don Mattingly's job is still a little vague. So who knows what can happen there. You know, Matt Hagg is someone I think that's earned probably a little bit more role, a little bit more trust based on everything that we can view from afar and everything that we hear up close. But the answer is, yeah, anytime your team underperforms like this, you're going to have to reevaluate the coaching staff. As for what they do with the bullpen, man, so for the rest of the season, get ready for a lot of waiver claims and AAA churn. I would imagine the Jays are going to kick the tires on a bunch of guys who become available, get called up from AAA or get waived somewhere else, not because they're solutions, but because you want to get a look at a guy, see if you can help him tweak something. You know, we see a guy like Nick Mears get traded from the Rockies, and then it comes out that, hey, the Rockies are, and I'm paraphrasing here, this is the underlying context of what he says, the Rockies are pretty bad at this stuff, and I've been tipping pitches for a month, and nobody told me until someone on another team told a friend of mine, and they told me, and now, you know, Nick Mears looks better. There are going to be guys like that. You know, Yenesis Cabrera was one of those guys. Brendan Little was one of those guys. Sometimes you can claim those guys and they turn into back-end rotation or bullpen pieces for you. I don't think many of them become closers for you, although Jordan Romano was a guy they lost in the Rule 5 draft and got returned. So sometimes those guys are available. I just think there's going to be a lot of churn. This front office has told us for years and years they don't believe in spending big on the bullpen in free agency. It's probably the least efficient way any team can spend their money. You're better off, you know, making lower-end trades, trying to turn starters into relievers, calling for the minors to see what sticks, etc. But it is pretty striking to look at the bullpen right now and be like, yeah, maybe two of those guys are back next year and they're not in the high leverage spots. A lot of work to do there, Drew. Thad in South Dakota asked if the moves at this deadline have any impact on the future of the front office. You know, it does restocking the prospect pool change anything? I don't think it should. I think you should probably, like, yes, they've executed so far this trade deadline well, in my estimation. That is a less convincing data point than the fact that they had to be sellers at this deadline. You know, I've been pretty clear that I haven't loved the last 18 months of work this front office has done. I like what they've done so far at this deadline. You know, how that all comes down is a decision that'll probably take into a lot of factors that aren't just the return at the trade deadline here, the ability and confidence level in getting extensions done for Vlad Arbo, in, you know, laying out a competitive window for beyond 2025 as well. Who knows? It's possible, you know, Mark Shapiro's deal ends at the end of 2025 and Ross Atkins at the end of 2026. It's possible, and no one wants this, but it's possible, given the way these things go, that they run into next year with kind of a similar setup to this one, where it is it's a win now year, but if things don't go well, the button is there for a larger eject and rebuild. Tim and Stony Creek asked, this is not really a trade deadline one, but we'll take a look on it anyway. David Schneider's offered nothing lately. What's up? I don't know if I'd say nothing. He is really struggling with fastballs, though. You dig into the numbers, that's the primary area where he's struggling. We've obviously seen his playing time decrease. It's been interesting to track since he came up. He obviously comes up and has this unbelievable start. Pitchers start pitching him high in the zone of velocity. Maybe that's an area he's going to struggle. He adjusts to that. He comes into this year, it's like, okay, well, he's a dead pull hitter. We're going to pitch him outside. He tries to adjust to that, tries to use all fields a little bit more, or at least get up on those and to be able to pull them still. And now we're seeing they're just hammering him with fastballs and fastballs and fastballs. And part of that is, you know, maybe in the swing, part of it is maybe he had shown he's able to hit breakers and off speed a little bit. Some of it is maybe changing the, you know, hey, he's looking for this and this count, so we're going to bang him with a fastball. And if he's sitting off speed or sitting spin, you know, he's not able to catch up to that yet and adjust. That's the primary thing. Like, I don't think there's, I think it's a young guy who's in his second year and pitchers have a scouting report on him now and they're trying new things. I don't think that means he can't figure it out. He hasn't gone through quite this extended a lull, but he had little pockets of, hey, pitchers are attacking him like this, and then he has to counter, he has to figure that out. But it'd be interesting to see because, you know, getting challenged with high velocity is something you can't get away from in the major leagues in 2024. Someone who didn't sign there has asked if there's any news on Treya Savage. So he is the Blue Jays' first-round pick. He has not signed yet. The Jays have done most of the work signing their draft guys, and they have a little bit of extra wiggle room here around the bonus pool. Shai Davidi said on the JD Bunkus podcast yesterday that this is probably something that's going to get done in the coming days. It didn't sound like Shai was too worried about it. Didn't sound like the Blue Jays are too worried about it. So you'd have a slight preference to have this done by now. Most of the guys have signed, but to whoever asked that question, we don't anticipate it being an issue based on the latest reporting from our people at Sportsnet. So understand the concern for sure. Anytime it's not done, you wonder why isn't it and when will it get done? But it doesn't sound like anyone is too worried about that yet. Okay, a couple of other good questions in the text line that we'll save for future segments. As always, standard message and data rates may apply, but text us to 590-590. We'll answer those questions throughout the show, throughout the second half. We got two more hours coming at you. Arden Zwelling and Robert Murray are going to join us on the other side. Once we get to Robert Murray, we'll zoom out of the Jays a little bit, talk a little MLB-wide stuff. We'll talk to Robert Murray. We'll talk to Ben Clemens. We'll talk to Anthony Castrovince. Chris Black is going to join us a little later. And of course, if there's news, we'll bring it to you. Right now, it's a lot of the national newsbreakers just being like, well, teams are still active. These guys are still available. Last year, we did this show 10-1, and nothing happened. There wasn't even a rumor. So let's hope we get a little more action in the second half of this one. Again, Arden Zwelling going to join us on the other side. We'll also maybe take a look at tonight's game. The Jays do play at 6:35. Chris Bassett against Corbin Burns. Can't imagine that's front of mind for too many of you, though, right now. Let's take a break. Let's reset with Arden Zwelling, see where the Blue Jays are at most of the way through their 2024 unlikely sellers deadline here. Five players out, 11 prospects in. Take a break. Arden's next as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.